Hi, and welcome to the Boat Princess podcast. My name is Nikki Vo, and I'm your host. I am a boat owner, a marina owner, a director on the Marina Industries Association, and a huge advocate for boating. In this series, I'm sharing the stories from every nook of the boating industry with the intention of encouraging more women to join me and for more women to get behind the helm too. I want to share the experience and opportunities of boating, of the boating industry, and I want you to join me as I bring the conversations and answer all the questions you've had. Boating is not just for the glamorous and rich and famous. It's full of beautiful and interesting people making the most of our natural environment and getting out there, enjoying the waterways. So let's let off the lines, take over the helm, and escape to the world of boating. So welcome everyone to another episode of the Boat Princess podcast. We are sitting in the business center. Thank you to the Intercontinental Sanctuary Cove for having us here. It's a fabulous hotel and there is nothing better than being right on top of Sanctuary Cove show, staying at the Intercon here. And because of that, I met an amazing woman yesterday who is from New Zealand, and I thought I would grab her before she goes back and interview her on our podcast because she is pretty amazing. So welcome to Alicia King from Tidal Yachting.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Tell me exactly what Tidal Yachting does.
Tidal Yachting is a end-to-end superyacht services company. So there are four or five main services that we have. So we have recruitment, we have which is like crew placement effectively onto the yachts. We have an agency which is, does like logistics, imports, exports, deliveries. We do provisioning, you name it. If it has something to do with the yacht, we do it. We've just branched into management, which is basically looking at the safety measures on your vessel. It even goes to the point where how much wine you've got on board, and basically managing the boat for you, including organising all those berthage arrangements, etc.
What size of boats are we talking for these services?
So for the recruitment and agency services, there is no limit for how large this yacht can be. So at the moment, most of our clients are around the 50 to 95 metre mark. However, we do put a lot of crew on vessels that are doing like deliveries from the islands to Australia, or Australia to New Zealand, and vice versa. And those are on vessels that are, you know, 14, 15 metres if they fancy doing a crossing, like the crazy sailors of this world. And then our management and project management services. So management is aimed at the smaller side at the moment, so under 50 metres, because we've just launched the service. And with our project management, again, it pretty much stops where the biggest lift in New Zealand stops. So yeah, we're kind of up to the 55 metre mark.
So a few words that we may need to explain to our listeners in there. Provisioning. What is provisioning?
So provisioning is when the yacht needs food, water, wine, cheeses.
All that important stuff.
Yeah, all that important stuff, you know. but the thing is that we often go a step further. So a lot of the things that the boats need, they need certain cuts of meat. They need it to be, they'll ask if they want it to be like American cut or French cut. The types of cheeses, what they weigh, gold leaf, what else can I think of? Caviar, we're getting it in from overseas. The wines, we have our own like distributors that we use that will get us the wines effectively that our guests need. So yeah, it's all of that. We also do things with provisioning, like getting uniforms in for the crew.
Yeah. A quality marine clothing moment right there.
Yes.
Yeah. And there is another term you mentioned there in project management.
Yes.
Please explain for our listeners project management of what?
So project management is when a vessel needs to have maintenance completed on it, or if a vessel needs to have a full refit done, which is often when an older style vessel is bought by somebody and they'll rip the interior out and redo it. Kind of like renovating your house, effectively. Yes. But what we do is we manage it from the get-go. So the boat will come in, we'll have the vessel hauled out, which I do.
Yes.
haul the vessel out, she'll go up on the stands, and then we'll run the we'll project manage her refit or her maintenance while she's out on the hard stand.
That's great. And then in terms of the actual management of the vessel, that's different to project management. Can you explain that for us too?
Yes, so management is slightly different in that you as a management company are kind of like the first point of contact for the crew. You write all of the crew contracts, you organise all of the crew payment, you look after the safety management systems on board, all of the like requirements and checks that the vessel needs to go through. If the vessel's charter, we manage their charter requirements and make sure that they're all good to go effectively. It goes to the nth degree as well, like I said, about how much wine is actually on the boat and what checks have been done internally and how many hours the engines have got on them and when the next maintenance needs to be and all of that kind of stuff. So in a nutshell, if it has something to do with the yacht, we do it. It's our business.
I think you even organise passages, don't you?
Yep. So we can help with passage planning for people that just want a second set of eyes, or if they would like some specialist help, we've got captains in our team that are able to do that. We've also got captains in our team that do the actual deliveries with the owners and or without the owners if they need to have their boats taken. I think we're actually going to deliver one of the Riveras from the show back to New Zealand.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so that's quite cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so really covering all bases to do with yachts. That's a really complex business you've got there.
Yeah, I think the difference between operating a business like this in the Southern Hemisphere versus operating a company like this in the Med or the Americas, Caribbean, is that New Zealand and the South Pacific does not have the sheer volume of super yachts that the likes of the Med and America do.
Yep.
And so rather than us offering one service to a couple of yachts,
yeah,
we offer various services to a couple of yachts, and it means that we become effectively the boat's PA.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
Okay. But that's not going to be for long, because super yachts are going to be all coming to Australia.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what we advocate. And yeah, Australia and New Zealand and other countries in the South Pacific have been advocating for this to happen for a very long time, and I think that everyone is even more motivated now after COVID, after the marine industry has been hanging on by, you know, the skin of their teeth effectively,
yeah,
to get those boats here and show them really what New Zealand and Australia and the South Pacific has. We are an absolute jewel.
We really are.
Yeah.
We really are. And the bed's so full. We need some over here.
Exactly. Have some space. Choose your own bay.
That's so true. Choose your own bay.
Yeah.
Let's use that. Choose your own bay. New advertising. The South Pacific. I love that. I'm very conscious of being open to opportunity and listening very intently when I talk to people. That's, I hope, why I think I'm a good podcaster. But when I heard your story, when we just randomly met in the VIP lounge yesterday, I thought, oh, this is a story we've got to tell. So, Alicia, you own a company.
Yes, I do.
In New Zealand.
Yes, I do. That's Tidal Yachting.
And tell me what that company does.
So Tidal Yachting originally was actually set in place to help crew that kind of needed at hand to navigate what super yachting is, how do we get into it, all of that type of thing. And then that slowly grew into recruitment. We became a Maritime Labour Convention recruitment company. And then that started to grow. We started to get more clients. They started needing help to navigate the red tape of COVID. That ended up being us organising them helicopter flights and berthage and imports, exports, deliveries. We now have just launched our management, so we've started to do smaller boat management, And because of my history, we decided to go into the project management realm as well, which is the haul out, hard stand, refit side of things.
Wow. So that's a fairly complex little business you've got going on there.
It is.
It's not little. So you mentioned your history there. So let's just unpack that a little bit. Well, I'm going to go right back, actually, a little bit earlier.
Sounds great.
A little bit earlier to your childhood, right? Usually when somebody goes into boating industry, there's a pattern of something in your childhood that made you fall in love with boats or made you fall in love with the water or something like that. Is there something in your childhood that did that for you?
So I was really lucky growing up on the Coromandel Peninsula. My granddad had a boat. We used to go pippy picking. We used to go fishing, things like that. My parents enrolled us in surf lifesaving when I was quite young. And through surf lifesaving, I started to drive IRBs, the inflatable rescue boats. Then I started racing in an all-female team. That then kind of projected me into wanting to do something to do with the ocean. But when I was 15, we were all cruising around, going to the careers expos and shows and stuff. All my friends wanted to be doctors or nurses or veterinarians or anything like that. And I couldn't find what it was that I wanted to do. And I rolled up to the Navy stand and the guys were like, hey, if you can do 100 press ups, we'll give you a bunch of free stuff. And so I was like, yeah, okay, sounds good. Did that. And then next minute I said to my mum, I think I'm going to enlist in the Navy.
Yeah.
She's like, okay. At 15. So I was like, you know, had to wait 2 years to be able to do that. But then I did it. So.
Wow. So I'm actually reading into that, that you really enjoyed that time with your granddad.
Yeah, I did. Absolutely enjoyed the time with my granddad and my dad. I was always out there with the boys. Whatever they were doing, I wanted to go and do it too.
That's so good. So really great memories for you as a kid on the water, around boats, enjoying that lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. And like still today, all of my friends, you know, they've got boats. We like to go fishing. We like to be out on the water, all of us together.
That's great. So you went into the Navy?
Yes, I did.
Tell me about that.
As soon as my mum and dad made me finish school, non-negotiable.
To HSC level, you meant, what we would call HSC?
Yes, yeah.
What do you have in New Zealand?
So NCEA. Okay. So I had to finish NCEA level 3, and then they were like, you can go and do whatever you want, but you need to be able to get into university if that's what you wanted to do.
Good advice.
Yeah. So then I joined the Navy as a officer of the watch, Officer Watch Warfare, GLX, and then progressed through navigation. I really took a shine to it. I loved it. And then progressed on to be a navigator. So I spent 5 years in total in the Navy.
So tell me what that role, tell me about a daily part of that role, if you like.
So as a navigator, I worked on the inshore patrol vessels, and so you're third in command of that ship. Then you've just got the executive officer and the commanding officer above you. You also run a department, so you have my department was the seamanship department, so they look after everything from the rigid hull inflatable boats. They do all the seamanship on board. I deal with the officer, the watchers, the watchkeepers as well. So you'd basically go through. I'm like, oh, what did I do all that time ago? You'd look after the rosters. You'd make sure that you do all the navigational plans. You'd do all the pilotage into the different ports in New Zealand. And you do the ocean crossings and that type of thing as well.
Wow. That's a big task. Big role.
It was great though. I loved it, every minute of it.
Yeah.
And I got to go to some amazing, amazing places. Like we went to Antarctica, we did aid work in the islands. It was just, I mean, if I start talking about my stories from the Navy, we could be here all day.
Oh, I love that. Give me an aid story from the islands.
So we went over to Papua New Guinea to Rabaul. And the whole point of us going over there was to get rid of explosive ordnance from World War II. And so while we were over there, there's over 750 kilometres of tunnels that were dug during the war. And so in those tunnels, there is still explosive ordnance.
Wow.
Yes. So we basically, what our job was, is that we went ashore and we went and got these 5-inch shells, and the explosive ordnance team went ashore and they were disabling bombs, which in the wisdom of the locals back then, they had just planted trees on top of them. They knew they were there, They didn't want kids to be running over them, but one of them was actually at a school. So they went and disarmed the bomb, and then they would take it to an explosive ordnance disposal site, and then we'd blow it up.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a really important role, and how did that feel, making that difference?
It was really cool because as part of that trip as well, we helped paint some schools and put computers in there, and we did toys and we had lolly scrambles with the kids, and it was just a fantastic feeling, and the people were just so kind and open to having us in their space, and in their homes, and they just loved the work that we were doing. Like, you'd have the kids running down the street, like giving you high fives as the truck's going past as we're heading out to the explosive ordnance site. So it was just heartfelt thing, and you know that you've gone through all of this training to be able to do something so good for somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what a magical moment. I love that story.
Yeah.
That's so good.
I mean, my time in the Navy was filled with things like that, and moments of terror when you're going through 10 and a half meter swells,
or
you have to strap yourself into your bed at night time to be able to go to sleep, and you can't ring your mum for 30 days because there's no internet reception. But it's like, it's all part and parcel of it, and it's definitely made a huge chunk of what I am now today.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And were there many women with you in the Navy at that time?
There weren't. There was a few women that were ahead of me in the group that we went in with. We had three of us,
mm-hmm.
And all three of us passed out at the end, which was great. There is a lot of women that do all different jobs in the Navy, mm-hmm. and there's nothing to really say, you can't do that unless it's like something that's potentially physical, like diving or something like that.
Yep.
But yeah, it's the world's your oyster, and I know that I was very lucky to have several girls, several off the watches that were learning how to do their jobs, go with me to sea, and so I felt like I was able to impart on them the things that I had learned, and now they're all still in the Navy there today. So,
oh, that's fantastic!
Yeah, it's really cool, and I'm still great friends with all of them as well.
Yeah, that's lovely. So from the Navy, you went to where?
From the Navy, I got on a plane and I went to Europe and just jumped in the deep end of the pool because I had absolutely no idea how to get a job on a yacht.
Yep.
And I spent quite a substantial amount of money partying it up, really, when I first got there. And then after some time in Europe, and once I got used to, CVs and how they're supposed to look and how you're supposed to look for work in the industry and getting on top of taxes and being away and all of that type of thing, then I got a job on a yacht.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What sort of yacht?
So, funnily enough, the very first yacht that I ever got a job on was a sailing yacht, and I don't know how to sail. So, but with my nav training, they were like, you can come and do nav for the regattas. And they taught me how to sail. So that was really cool. So that was a 30-meter wally.
Oh my goodness.
Yep, and then we had a 15-meter chase boat as well, so that was quite cool to be able to drive that.
Yeah.
And then I actually worked on several different vessels throughout my career. So leaving the Navy, I was in quite a high role, and then going into, it's a very much the same industry. We're still in the maritime marine industry.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's so vastly different.
Yeah.
The way that these yachts are run, the standard of service and care, the detail that the exterior staff go to, I had to start from the bottom.
Mm.
So here's me with all these tickets. Some of them they couldn't be used over in Europe, so it didn't matter that I knew how to do pilotage. It was irrelevant. I had to completely start again.
That's a bit frustrating, that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was real frustrating.
Yeah.
But, it was, I actually went into my yacht master's course, and when I walked in the door, the guys in the course said, the basic training course is next door.
Ouch. Did you burn them at that point? Or?
I was like, no, I'm here for my yacht master. And then proceeded to help them learn navigation for the next 3 days. And they paid me in beer and pizza, so that was great. But but yeah, it was good. It's funny though, you do often get underestimated, I think, as a woman in the industry until people get to see just what you can do, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So guys out there, don't do that. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and also while we're talking about it, let's, I don't know who's responsible for the Yachtmaster accreditations worldwide, but wouldn't it be nice if you could just get one somewhere and it would be recognised everywhere else in the world?
Yeah, you know? So we work really closely with our crew, especially because I've gone through what I've gone through. We want to make sure that if you're going to get a certification, you know exactly where you can operate with that certification. And it's the same with engineering. You know, you can go down the commercial route, you can go down the yacht route, but it's understanding at what point you're going to have to pay some money to get a certificate of equivalency and, yeah, when you can transfer that over. So at the moment, we're actually looking to join up with the PYA and represent the Professional Yachting Association in New Zealand.
So that's who does it?
Yeah.
Okay, see, I asked the question, it gets answers in this interview. How good is that? I love that. So let's sort of get back to, you've gone from the Navy, you've gone to into a super yacht role on a Wally. What were the differences for you going from Navy to super yacht? And you talked about detail and all that sorts of things, but in terms of a team as a crew, how different did that feel for you?
I think that the Navy's incredibly structured, and as soon as you join the Navy, you know what your role is, and when you join a boat, you do too. And when I say boat, I mean a yacht.
Yeah.
But the roles are vastly different in both kind of areas. The Navy is more operational, where the yachts are more hospitality based. And so you still need to understand the safety side of things when you go into yachts, because that's what keeps us all safe.
Yep.
But your day-to-day role is not so much, it depends what your job is, but it's not so much about, you know, you're not going out there and doing anti-piracy or, you know, going out there and watching Greenpeace or anything like that. Like, your day-to-day job is making sure that you're in the right anchorage, that there's no swell, that there's a great place to swim. For the stewardesses, it's making sure that everything's, you know, secured inside and that everything looks beautiful and untouched and unscathed every single day, where it's a little bit, yeah.
So, in other words, it's making sure everybody's safe but not life-threatened.
Yeah.
It's the fundamental difference.
Yeah.
That's great. So how long were you on that super yacht for?
So I was on the Wally. We did a shipyard period, and I think I was on there for about 9 months. And then I realised that I wasn't really a sailor, and I was more of a motor yacht type of gal.
Mm-hmm.
And then so, yeah, I went and looked for a job on a motor yacht, and I managed to get a job as a mate. Which was actually a boat called Princess Iluka. She is, so she is an Australian vessel, and her keel was like 500 years old. She was found in Australia.
Wow.
Yeah, and then the guy completely refurbished her.
Oh, so, wow, what a special boat to be on.
Amazing. Yeah. So, and then that kind of started my progression. I ended up working on a 45 metre in Dubai.
Yeah.
As a mate, and then the captain went on leave, and the owner asked me to step up into captain.
Yay.
Yeah, for the Dubai International Yacht Show, which was amazing because we were the largest boat in show, and I was the only female captain at the show.
That's fantastic. But even more fantastic, it's in Dubai.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's really, one would not expect, I mean, at first people are, you know, not expecting a female captain, unfortunately. That's progressing. But then they're certainly not expecting a female captain in Dubai, right? Because of the cultural expectations.
Correct. Yeah. And potentially not one with two tattooed sleeves either.
Wow. So tell me about that first moment for you as a captain. Tell me about that.
I was terrified. I really didn't want to hurt his boat, but he was a great owner, and very supportive. And the best thing is that the crew were so supportive of me, like moving the boat into the berth, and then we got it prepped to be shipped. So that's a whole nother kettle of fish. While the captain was on leave, so for me, that was one, it was amazing that he had approached me to step up into that role rather than him being like, okay, well, you know, you do your job and
that's brilliant.
It. And it meant that the other guys on the boat as well, they got to step up into the role above, which kind of was like, it just meant that everyone wanted to prove themselves. Everyone was supportive of each other and everyone helped out everywhere. And honestly, it went off without a hitch. We had the best time. And then once we got the boat to Europe and we did the shipyard period with the boat, I decided whilst I was there that I actually really liked cooking. And so I left and trained as a chef and then came back into yachting as a chef.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
Of course you did.
Something so different.
So captain to chef.
Yep.
That's an interesting decision.
And I loved every moment of it.
Yeah.
I have had some great owners. I've had some great crew. Again, traveled to the most amazing places in the world. Some amazing experiences. You know, you become part of their extended family, effectively, especially when you work on private yachts.
Yeah.
And so just, yeah, some of the things that we get to do are just insane.
Yeah, I've always said if I had my time again, I would have gone into super yacht.
Yeah, yeah. 100%.
Yeah, because it is a very different world to experience, and you get to meet some amazing people as well. Yeah.
And I think that working on the yachts, if I'm completely honest, and meeting the people that I did and seeing what they could achieve and then the things that they got from achieving it, the things that they got to do with their families and the way that they lived their lives really structured what I did when I came home.
There you go. Because it's given you a goal, a massive goal.
Massive goal.
This is what my life could be like if I do this.
Huge, huge shoes to fill.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I love it. So we've got to the stage where you come back to New Zealand.
Yes.
And you have, in that time, in that career time, you've seen a few things that you've had a hard time doing and some problems that therefore are in place for people that want to go into the super yacht crewing world.
Yes.
So most businesses start like that. They're a problem that needs to be solved. So you've seen that opportunity and said, okay, that's a problem. I need to solve it. Some people just see it and just say, that's a problem. It was hard for me. But you've gone, that's a problem. I want to solve it. Right? And that's the fundamental difference between somebody that starts their own business and somebody that doesn't. They actually say, I'm going to solve this problem. So how did you start your business?
Well, I said to my dad, I was like, this is what I want to do. And he's like, okay, well, you know, you'll know the right time to do it. But I knew that I couldn't just leave yachting and then try and start something off the cuff. So I actually, in the last year that I was on the yachts, I spent a lot of time kind of figuring out how you start a business, for one. My accountant at the time thought that I was joking and that it might have been like a scam when I messaged her saying, hey, I want to open up a company and this is what I want to do. She wasn't 100%. I'd never had an accountant before. So she was like, I don't think this is real. Now she laughs at it. But I started that train of stuff and obviously had to figure out my tax because you've been working overseas for so long and all that type of thing. And then with discussions with my dad, he'd been keeping an eye on the developments in New Zealand and where I could potentially mesh into that with these ideas that I was having. And then that's when Tauranga Bay of Plenty built a hard stand with a 350-ton travel lift.
Okay, just so a little one?
Yep, just a little one. It was actually the biggest one.
Exactly. I was being a little bit sarcastic. Oh, sorry. For those listening overseas, I know you don't understand sarcasm. I do apologise. So 350 tons. Okay.
Yes.
That's a pretty big.
She's a pretty big lift.
Pretty big straddle cuddler.
And at this stage, I'm thinking, okay, well, if they're building something like that, there has to be businesses to support that around it. So I came home and I approached the businesses that were around it and that had bought plots of land around it. There was five plots of land that were sold.
Yeah.
And told them what it was that I had started and what I wanted to do. And the guys at Super Yacht Coatings in Tauranga, fully on board, fully supportive. They were like, yep, we're building a big black shed. It's going to be, you can take a 50 metre motor yacht inside of it, and we're going to have some downstairs offices. So if you want the road front office, it's yours.
Oh, great.
And then they kept to their word for 2.5 years while it was being built. Yep. So it's now finished, and we've been in there for about a year now with them. And I approached Vesselworks and told them about my big dream, my big pipe dream. And they said, well, to help you meet people and to help you get some income, do you want to do administration for us, you know, a couple of hours a week? So I was living in the Coromandel at the time, living the dream, going surfing and fishing and doing all that kind of stuff, and driving to Tauranga for 2 days every week to work for Vesselworks. And then after I'd been working there for about 3-4 months, the lead travel lift operator there said to me, do you want to drive? And I'm like, what, the lift? And he goes, yeah, you want to drive the lift?
Oh, I love that.
And, you know, you're trying to be cool, calm, and collective, but at the same time, you're like,
yes, like, it's a talker toy. Please, can I have a go?
And so, yeah, and so he fully took me under his wing. His name's Phil Waddell. He's an amazing person. Fully took me under his wing, taught me everything that I needed to know about the boat. I worked with some amazing boat builders while I was there who taught me a lot about ship construction and about everything to do with that role. And when I lifted my very first super yacht,
yeah,
and launched her and put her back in the water, it was a pretty cool day. I felt very supported. Everyone was clapping and the boat was tooting as
she sailed up.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And the crew on board, obviously supportive, they know what my background is. And we still provide support for the yachts, but yes, now I also drive a 350-ton travel lift.
That is, I mean, thank you, Phil.
Yeah.
For saying that. That's so wonderful that he said that to you, but also that you said, yes, I'm going to have a go at this, and took that opportunity. Because sometimes women are offered an opportunity and they might feel they're not capable of it and they won't take it. Mm. And sometimes that's just because what they are. But, you know, I really think it's wonderful when guys offer that opportunity to women and support them in doing that. And then you've got a whole bunch of other people that have added to that and supported you and made you feel, yes, you can do this. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
I think I'm really lucky. Tauranga has already an existing maritime and marine industry. And when I came in to it, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, very green, not knowing what I was getting myself into, everyone kind of helped me, and not only just in Tauranga, but when I started my company, I reached out to other yachting companies within New Zealand and abroad and said, hey, like, this is, you know, how do I figure out how much I charge? Yes. How do you do that?
Yeah.
You know, in an industry that's so elusive.
Yes.
How do you figure out what hourly rate you charge and how you charge for recruitment and things like that? And you know, or you have something that comes up and you don't know who to bounce it off because you've started this on your own. You don't have a boss that you can say, hey, this happened, what do you reckon we do?
Yeah.
So you have to go out to other people within the industry and have those discussions with them. And so in that way, I think New Zealand's great because they are supportive of each other and they almost entice competition.
Yep.
I mean, they don't want you to take their competition, but they're there for it, you know. and I think that's kind of as well, I'll just put it out there, I think that's what's got the yachting and maritime industry through a very hard time over the last 2.5 years of COVID.
Oh, gosh, so hard.
Yeah. There's the support and the collaboration as well between the different companies.
Yeah, I always say, what's that wonderful expression? The tide rises all boats.
Mm.
If you all join together and help each other, you all survive or rise, as opposed to working against each other and sending each other down the spiral of yeah.
Yes.
So I love that you've had that. And I had the same thing in the boating industry. When I came into selling boats, I was so green. But I had some amazing people around me that I literally said, okay, the surveyors just put this on that report. I have no idea what that means. Can you tell me what that means?
You just have to be honest, eh? You have to be honest when you can't, when you just don't know.
Yeah. And if you're really honest and open and a little bit vulnerable like that, then people will help. They will always, they're not going to say, oh, I don't know. You know, they're going to help you. So I think that's a really important message for us to get out there, that it is okay to say, I don't know what this means. Can you help me with this? Because there are, I mean, in boating industry, I don't think you can ever know everything. You're constantly learning in this industry. And there are so many people that have got so much experience, especially the guys that have, like our John Law, our Marina Director at Bob and Hedy, he's done 300,000 nautical miles.
Yeah.
And he knows every little thing about a boat that I ask him, he'll know the answer to, invariably. And I suck that in. I love that, absorbing all. And I think that's the thing. Be a sponge. Suck it all in. Ask all the questions. And it makes it more fun, right?
Oh, agreed. And I think as well, like, yachting is very much like that. But for me as a business owner, I'm the same in business. And so, like I said, I've had these amazing people in my life that kind of drove me to do what I'm doing. But now I continue to suck from these other people. These other, you know, I'm the sponge. I'm like, you know, can we create, another relationship here? Is there something I can learn from you? Any of those things. And I found that people in the yachting industry are more than happy to give you a hand.
I agree. Totally agree.
Create the relationships.
Yeah.
Build with you. Be a part of it. 100%.
It's brilliant. So give me a normal day in the working life of Alicia.
If the people that I work with listen to this podcast, they're gonna be like, chaos. It is a bit like that. I do wear a lot of hats. So I do do stuff for Vessel Works, like doing the 350-ton lift. And I'm training two operators at the moment to come up and be able to do that role with me.
Yep.
At the same time, we run our office from Tauranga, and we do a lot of trips to go and visit our clients. I do like to do a lot of face-to-face time with our clients that we work with, so that they feel like they have a relationship with you, and that you're on their team, which we obviously are. So a day in the life of Alicia, I get up, I have one meeting with one company, I have another meeting with another company, and then it's just, we do lots of work for the boats, we're doing imports, exports, deliveries, finding crew. At the moment, we are in the Mediterranean season.
Right.
But we're obviously Southern Hemisphere based, which means 5 a.m. calls to references, it means late night interviews with our candidates that are overseas, in Amsterdam or Panama or wherever they are, to try and get the people to the yachts, which means that, yeah, we do some long hours.
Yeah.
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 Very varied.
Yeah, because you're dealing with European time and...
Yeah.
So meetings at 2 o'clock in the morning, they're always fun, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Some people say to me, they're like, oh, I'm a morning person or I'm an afternoon person. I'm a both person. I don't have an option.
Now, I heard a really interesting statistic that Australians should know the other day, which is that around 28% of super yacht crew come from Australia.
I would believe it.
Yeah.
Australians and New Zealanders, not that the rest of the world doesn't also have a great name, but yeah, they do have a really great name within the yachting industry. They are gung-ho, they're ready for it, they're going to get in there, they don't care about if they're interior or exterior, they're pretty much ready to go where they need to go, especially with a lot of Australian chefs are amazing, yeah, yeah, that I've worked with.
Yeah. I think Australian chefs are really good, aren't they? I mean, the food available in Australia is just so good. We're so spoiled. And now we go overseas and as Australians, I think we enjoy a lot more culture than the rest of the world thinks we do, especially in coffee and food and all those amazing things. And so we can share that abundance, of course, because we've got such a beautiful mix of people living in Australia, bringing all these beautiful cuisines to us, that we've kind of blended into this amazing Asian fusion beauty, haven't
everything
we?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I think as well, with New Zealand and Australia being so close to the water, or most of Australia being so close to the water, we are very lucky in the types of seafoods that we have available to us and the different ways, especially with the island so close, the different ways and the different flavours that can be used with cooking seafood. Yeah. And so you find that on the yachts, they just, you know, the chefs that come from New Zealand and Australia, they really do just take to it.
Yeah.
And can provide something that is a little bit different to your normal Mediterranean cooking, especially when you're on a yacht. People, yes, they sometimes want to have burrata and bread and oils and all of that kind of thing, but they also like to taste something that's a bit different from where you are, the things that you're good at cooking. And it doesn't matter, yeah, where you are as a chef or where you've come from, they still like to see your expertise and your past and your food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you raised a couple of good points there. One of being that the majority of Australians live by the water, and I think that's why we're good at the superyacht crew space, because we're used to being around water. We love our ocean and we love our beaches and so on and so forth. And you've touched there on cookery. I can feel your passion now for that space. So obviously you were a chef, now you're doing what you're doing. Do you use your chefing skills at home now, or how are you keep maintaining that passion I can see that you have for food?
Well, I guess if you ask any of my friends, I have quite expensive taste when it comes to food. But mostly because I don't like to eat things out that I know I can make myself.
Yeah.
Or that I would make myself. But yeah, I cook every single day for myself. And usually it's known to everyone else that my door's always open and there's always food on the table and you can come whenever you want to have dinner with me. I'm very much like that all of the time. We do a lot of family dinners.
Yeah.
A lot of family time still. And so yeah, that's where I get to use that cooking. But I get to use my knowledge of provisioning in my role, because we obviously provision for the vessels that are here.
Yeah.
Even if they're in the South Pacific, we can pretty much organise it anywhere. So I get to use my passion all the time. But yeah, like I said, love food.
Damn, I wish I lived in New Zealand. I could go for dinner.
Yeah. When you're over.
So. I guess now we've had an amazing chat, Alicia. I've really enjoyed talking to you. I'd love you to give the women out there that are potentially looking at coming into this industry or getting into boating in any way, can you give them some inspiration as to why they should do that?
I have found, and I guess I've just touched on this in the interview that we've just done, I find the yachting industry to be incredibly supportive, regardless whether you're female or not. If you need to support, if you need to ask the question, if you want to try something different, everyone in this industry that I have ever approached has been willing to help me get there. So when I say to you that I had a pipe dream, my pipe dream's 5 years in now, and I saw the look on people's faces when I told them I was going to build it, and now I've done it. But I could never have got there without the support of everyone that I interacted with along the way. All of the boat shows that I've been to, all of the people that I've spoken to, they all kind of motivate me. And so if you have motivation in any way, shape or form, whether it's just to go and get your skipper's ticket, or if it's just that you want your husband to let you drive the boat more, or you want to learn how to fish, or you want to learn how to spear fish, or you want to learn how to dive or free dive, or any of those water-related activities that we all know we can do from a boat, just get amongst it. And find other women, seek them out that are doing similar things and get on board. Because I know from my friends, they all do those activities, and that's how I have come to do them, is because they've showed me how.
That's amazing. Mm. So, Alicia King, where to from here for your business? What's your ultimate where you want to be in your business?
Onwards and upwards. The ultimate goal is for us to be international. So we work already with a lot of international yachts. All of our yacht crew that we have are international. We have a database full of them. I would like for us to have offices in the likes of Monaco and, you know, be amongst the leaders in the industry, to be able to have an office in Fort Lauderdale and to be able to attend those boat shows. Right now we're working on our reach. So people to see our brand and be like, oh yeah, Tidal Yachting, I know Alicia, or I know, you know, one of the girls, one of the guys from the office, and really feel like they have a personal connection with our company, not another brand. And so yeah, that's ultimately what I would like to do is to be amongst the leaders. But that takes time and I'm here for it.
I have no doubt that you are gonna do it, babe.
Thanks.
Yeah, because you've got motivation, you've got energy, you've got drive, and you've got courage, and you've got belief in yourself. Because somebody who is willing to get onto a 350-ton straddle carrier and say, yes, I can pick up this super yacht, that's brave. Mm. And the fact that you can do that is magnificent. So I never want you to lose that. And I want you to, encourage that in other women and men that you work with as well, because you are a shining light, and you should you will get there. I know, because you're amazing.
Thank you.
So, Alicia King, it has been a delight having you here. I hope everybody has enjoyed the bar background today, because that was all the that's all the people attending at Sanctuary Cove Boat Show having drinks after boat show at the Intercontinental here at Sanctuary Cove, which we do a lot. The boating, I guess you mentioned there, there is a lot of community in the boating industry, and the more boats, every time you go to another boat show, you see a whole bunch more people that you met at last boat show. And that community grows every time we see each other. So, Alicia, you've become part of our community, I hope. And we'd love you to stay in touch and be part of that, because I think you are a very special woman that is going to go a long way.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today. I've really enjoyed it. I really, really have. And it's always, I was actually saying to the guys before I came out here today, is that after I do talk about the things that I've done, it almost gives me a boost and a little bit of a motivation to be like, actually, you know what, that is where I came from and that's why I'm doing it and this is what I'm doing going forward. And like you said, every single one of us within the industry has the ability to have a larger reach, to reach more females that are within the industry, but males as well, to go and follow whatever pathway it is that they want to do.
Yeah, it's our job to bring more people into this industry and therefore make their lives better, because it's fabulous working in this industry.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Waking up to ocean. It's the best.
Alicia, thank you so much. It's been a joy having you here. We wish you every success in your business. Where can people find out about your business?
So we've got a lot of stuff online at www.tidalyachting.com. We've got a great Instagram page, which you can follow, Tidal Yachting, and our Facebook page as well. We try to engage not only with our clients, but a lot of our crew through that platform as well.
Awesome. Can you do me a favor? Can you send me a video of you lifting a super yacht on the 350-ton straddle carrier for my Instagram?
Sure thing.
That's fantastic. And thank you for joining on the Boat Princess podcast. Well, I hope you enjoyed my chat with Alicia King from Tidal Yachting. What an inspiration she is. It was great to meet her at Sanctuary Cove Boat Show just by chance, and I am one that always takes an opportunity when it is available. We did the interview the very next afternoon at Sanctuary Cove Boat Show. The wonderful things about boat shows is that you do get to meet people that you don't know in the boating industry, you haven't met before, and you get to know them at various events that go on at Boat Show. And if you missed out on having that opportunity at Sanctuary Cove Boat Show recently, do not worry. Sydney Boat Show is coming up soon. It starts on Thursday, the 28th of July, and is 5 days of heavenly boating in Sydney at Darling Harbour. So very excited to be involved in that event this year. Molfa, who organised Sanctuary Cove Boat Show, and the BIA, of course, are organising that together. So it's going to be a very exciting event, a whole new experience for Sydney. So I'm looking forward to that and hoping to see some of you there too. It's a joy to have you with me as always. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you on the water soon.